KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, the Federal Communications Commission revealed its plan to fully overturn Obama-era net neutrality rules. The FCC chair said the government will stop micromanaging the Internet. But critics say this means broadband giants like AT&T and Verizon can slow down access to sites and charge extra fees for better quality streaming. We'll discuss the debate over net neutrality coming up next after the news. Morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, the Federal Communications Commission revealed its plan to fully overturn the government's net neutrality rules. The Obama-era rules had curbed broadband providers from blocking or slowing down web traffic. The head of the FCC, Ajit Pai, said the government will, quote, stop micromanaging the Internet. But critics say the deregulation will open the door for telecom heavyweights like Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon to charge extra fees for better quality streaming. The new proposal will be presented at the FCC commissioners' meeting on December 14th, and it's already sparked furor among lobbyists on Capitol Hill. And joining us with the latest news on this topic is Tony Rahm. He's senior editor of Policy and Politics for Recode. And good morning, Tony Rahm.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you. And we are going to go into a debate with a couple of other people, but let's have you lay things out for us, if you'd be so kind. This proposal, as I said, according to Ajit Pai, head of FCC, means the government will, using his language here, stop micromanaging. Micromanaging the Internet, that is. And he's also said earlier on it's going to be a weed whacker on federal regulation. So what are we talking about here specifically as far as policy? Net neutrality gone, but what does it mean?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely correct to describe this as a weed whacker. So it's important to start by defining net neutrality, and it's the idea that Internet providers like AT&T and Comcast and so forth have to treat all web traffic equally. So they can't block your access to web pages, they can't slow down your access to competing services, and they shouldn't charge content companies for faster delivery of their music and movies and whatnot. And during the Obama administration, they put in place rules that treated these broadband providers like utilities to stop them from doing these sorts of things. But as you said, Chairman Pai did not believe in that approach. And the ideas that he's put forward today and yesterday would essentially remove the FCC from having much of a role in regulating net neutrality at all. It would shift much of the responsibility elsewhere in government, and it would allow these companies to begin to do some of the things that consumer groups don't like very much, such as paid prioritization, these ideas of online fast lanes. But in the eyes of Chairman Pai, it's all about transparency. It's all about deregulating governments, and we're headed towards a vote in December.
And that vote is likely to go in favor of Chairman Pai because we've got a 3-2 majority in terms of Republicans, almost predictable at this point. But there will be fights, legal fights, and a lot of action trying to get lawmakers involved. In fact, I'd like to hear your thoughts, Tony, about the battle that's set up here. I mean, it's a major battle between AT&T and telecom, Verizon and so forth, against Google and Amazon. And there's going to be extraordinary money and lobbying going on, obviously.
You're absolutely correct. It's a foregone conclusion at the FCC. The Republicans have the votes. They've said they were going to do this, and they're going to do this. And then that tees us up in a place where we're likely to see some litigation here, whether it's tech companies that launch a lawsuit to stop Chairman Pai, or it's consumer groups, organizations like Free Press and Demand Progress that helped organize some of the protests that you saw online over the summer with the help of folks like John Oliver. So that'll play itself out. But on the side, there's also this debate on Capitol Hill right now over what exactly should be done about net neutrality. If there's anything that tech and telecom companies agree on, it's this idea that we can't keep ending up back here, that the party change at the FCC whenever there's a Republican or a Democrat in power can't flip what the previous administration did on net neutrality. That's just not sustainable to have this continue to play out in court cases. So tech and telecom agrees that maybe Congress should write some lasting law here, but the lobbying frenzy that you described is precisely why were nowhere close to said law. There are plenty of Democrats and Republicans talking about it. There's plenty of debate on Capitol Hill, but you know, Congress is nowhere closer to writing such legislation than they were 5-10 years ago.
We're talking with Tony Romo, senior editor of Policy and Politics with Recode, talking about the FCC plans to drastically overturn the net neutrality rules. And this does shift, as you indicated earlier, power away from the FCC to the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, in terms of policing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly shifts power over to the FTC. In the current administration, under the previous administration, rather, the FCC addressed net neutrality by having what they called bright line rules. So using a portion of law, if they were able to say affirmatively that you can't block, you can't throttle, and you can't do paid prioritization. But Chairman Pai is scrapping all of those bright line rules. With the exception of one, he's requiring companies to be transparent about their practices. So if an AT&T or a Verizon or something wants to limit your access to web pages or strike deals with content makers for faster delivery of their services beyond what's normally acceptable for network management, they have to disclose that information to consumers and to the federal government for review. And then the idea is that the Federal Trade Commission would step in if a company was being deceptive or didn't do what it said it was going to do. That's the historical mandate of the FTC, that it polices unfair and deceptive acts and practices and serves as a watchdog for competition.
Yeah, but what kind of teeth does the FTC have?
The FTC does not have as many teeth as the FCC does, and that's because the FTC has to wait for a company to step in it, so to speak. It has to promise to do one thing and then not do that. It has to mislead consumers. It has to cause substantial harm by being anti-competitive before the FTC can take action. And it's very limited in the kinds of fines and sorts of redress it can seek when a company does make a mistake. There have actually been folks at the FTC, Democrats and Republicans alike, who have asked for more teeth, for more ability to enforce when, you know, it goes after a company that's done wrong, but Congress hasn't given them that. So this is a much different approach than we've seen in recent years, but Republicans stress it's enough to protect net neutrality.
Well, we'll get into debate on this. Critics are saying, of course, that the FTC is too hamstrung to be the main cop where net neutrality is concerned, although we've had, for example, spokespeople from Comcast already coming forward and saying we promise that we're going to be totally transparent and so forth. So it gets into, I guess, how much do you trust and who do you trust and all the rest of those kinds of questions. And speaking of that, I'd like to ask you one more question, Tony Romo, if I could. There are 20 million signatories who have essentially web users who have said with the FCC that they want to keep net neutrality. And the critics of net neutrality say a lot of these signatures are bogus. What can you tell us?
Yeah, it's actually a question I asked the FCC when I was speaking to them yesterday about these 21 million comments. And it's the second time that we've seen a record set on net neutrality when it comes to comments at that agency. Most of the time, the FCC maybe takes in a couple dozen comments from telecom nerds and lawyers and such. But the word from the FCC is that it was never about quantity. It was always about quality. In their eyes, even though a majority of those 21 million comments are in favor of net neutrality as it's currently on the U.S. government's books, that's not enough. The arguments, the legal arguments, the investment arguments are stronger on the other side in their mind, and so the numbers don't matter. And then to the issue with repeating comments in the docket, there's certainly that. There are a lot of organizations that put up form letters online where interested internet users who supported net neutrality could, through one click, just send their views to the agency. But I think it's important to remember that one person's form letter is another person's activism. Many of the people who did submit comments that way truly believed what they said, even if they didn't write it. They used another organization's words. But nevertheless, I think we'll see that piece play out as part of this court battle when we inevitably get there for folks who truly think that the FCC should have listened to the common person who was writing into the agency.
Tony Romm, good to have you with us. Appreciate very much your being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And again, Tony Romm, senior editor of Policy and Politics with Recode. Now let me tell you who is going to be debating this whole new reversal on net neutrality. Larry Downs is here with us in studio. He's a project director from the Georgetown Center for Business and Public Policy, author of Unleashing the Killer App, and recently co-authored Big Bang Disruption. He also writes regularly for the Harvard Business Review, Forbes, CNET, and the Washington Post. Welcome, Larry Downs.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Kit Walsh here in studio with us, staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who specializes in net neutrality and other topics. Welcome.
Thank you.
Delighted to have you as well. And let me begin with you, Kit Walsh. You say this is a worst-case scenario. Why?
So
The net neutrality is so popular that the opponents of net neutrality often have to pretend that they're actually supporting it. So there was some expectation that the FCC might say it was protecting net neutrality while undermining the legal basis for it. What's actually happened is they've wholesale rejected the idea that the FCC has a role to play in protecting the speech and innovation and access to knowledge online through net neutrality rules. So what we have is a new scenario. Since the beginning of the internet, there have been protections for net neutrality. In the dial-up days, Title II, which is the legal basis for the 2015 Open Internet Order, was applicable to phone lines. It's why we got dial-up ISPs. It's why there was so much competition. As broadband came in, there were norms, there were conditions of mergers, and there was actual FCC regulation and the threat of binding FCC regulation. So this order is taking us into new territory where the FCC is signaling to ISPs that it's open season to discriminate with respect to the content that users are able to share and read on the internet.
So from your perspective, the ISPs are going to determine what we can read, what we can do, what we can maybe even think online?
Well, the ISPs have a strong economic incentive to do so, particularly
Internet service providers,
days.
I should
right.
say.
Right. Internet service providers like Comcast, like Verizon, have a strong incentive to favor the services that they offer. A lot of these ISPs now also own content companies like Comcast's connection to NBC Universal. And they're interested in cutting deals so that the big incumbents that exist today, like Netflix, will pay them extra for the ability to reach you because they have a monopoly over access to you. Your ISP is the gatekeeper between you and the rest of the internet.
And that Netflix means that, becomes more expensive for the consumer.
That's right. It'll become more expensive. There will be fewer choices. You'll have consolidation both in the ISP market as well as the market to see materials online. It's bad not only for your pocketbook, but also for your opportunities to speak out.
Let me ask you about that specifically. What about free speech here?
Yeah, net neutrality is a very important protection for free speech. The world of the internet is weird and interesting and diverse. The director of the Center for Media Justice pointed out that it's one of the few places where black voices can be heard online. And this is true for multiple minorities because the internet is a place where you can speak without anyone's permission. No one decides what you say, whether you can say it, what app you can use, or what you can read. And that's the principle that's enshrined in the net neutrality rules. That's the rule that we have right now. So primarily, this is an issue that's concerning. Not only for economic reasons, but also for the ability of people to speak and organize online.
Let me get Larry Downs to respond to those. I mean, Larry Downs, first off, are we going to be at mercy of the Internet service providers with this whack weed cutting or whatever we want to call it?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it's quite that much of a doom and gloom scenario. As Tony pointed out, there is the Federal Trade Commission. There's also, by the way, the Department of Justice, which gets involved in particularly anti-competitive and anti-consumer behavior. So there is already some government regulation that's involved. I think more to the point, the incentives, I'm not sure that the incentives really are as bad as Kit suggests for the ISPs. Most of the time from 1996 to 2015, there weren't formal net neutrality rules in place. Some of these behaviors, just haven't aspired. I think some of them, there's technical reasons and business reasons, they probably wouldn't happen. But if, in fact, consumers are concerned about it, the real issue, I think, at the FCC, it's certainly for the current chairman all along, has been the authority, the legal authority of the FCC to regulate anything having to do with broadband. He very much opposed the idea of switching to this public utility classification in 2015, so it's no surprise he wants to undo it. And what many people, including...
That actually goes back to a law in the 1930s, doesn't it?
That's right. Well, it's been updated a lot since then. But yeah, the utility regulations that are under Title II, and they didn't use most of them or haven't used most of them yet, but they were there for the Bell monopoly in the 1930s and thereafter. But the issue has always been, what does Congress really want to do here? As Tony mentioned, there's been legislation thrown around in Congress for at least the last 10 years. Congressman Waxman had a bill in 2009. Senator Thune and Congressman Walden and Upton had a bill that they circulated in 2014, just before the FCC went ahead with the classification. And if, in fact, there are real issues or there are real issues that either come up or the consumers think will come up, clearly we can't keep going back and forth like this. It's Congress's job to make this decision one way or the other.
Well, let me ask you, though, because those who are in favor of really getting rid of net neutrality essentially argue that net neutrality limits consumer choice. And you heard from Kate Walsh that she also feels that there's a limitation of free speech here as well. Address those two, if you could.
Sure. So, again, from a business standpoint, technical standpoint, a lot of this would be very difficult to do and probably would violate other laws. From a free speech standpoint, I think there can be a real issue. You know, only the First Amendment only applies to the government. Private companies can limit speech. We see this all the time with content companies, too, Netflix and Comcast. Google and Facebook and the Reddit and the rest. And indeed, a couple of weeks ago, I was surprised to see Senator Franken saying he thought the net neutrality rules actually should be applied across the internet ecosystem, not just to ISPs, but to all providers, content providers as well, as a way of protecting speech for private users. This gets to a difficult area because if the government starts to say, you know, to the companies, you have to allow free speech, that in itself can be a free speech issue. And that's one of the things that's currently still going on in a legal challenge to the 2015 decision that Pi now wants to undo. There's still a legal challenge going on about that. It's pending at the Supreme Court right now, and it sits on the question of are the free speech rights of the companies being violated if they're told what they can and it can't do with regard to content.
Again, Larry Downs is project director of the Georgetown Center for Business and Public Policy. Kit Walsh is staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And Kit Walsh, the argument that we hear from those who are essentially in favor of scrapping net neutrality is that consumers benefit from more investment and that investments have gone down and the profits have gone up, perhaps, but the investments have gone down. What do you say to that?
So that's inconsistent with what the CEOs of the ISPs tell their investors when they have a legal obligation to be truthful. They say that net neutrality isn't harming their investment. What we see that harms investment is consolidation of these companies. So when the Sprint T-Mobile deal fell through, all of a sudden Sprint said, oh, well, that money we were holding for the acquisition, we're going to invest in new infrastructure. So it's lack of competition, lack of choice that's harming investment. It's not the requirement that ISPs continue to offer the non-discriminatory service that they always have done. And I'd love to speak to the idea that Congress has spoken here, because Congress has spoken. Congress said in the 1996 Telecom Act that when you have a telecommunications service, you regulate it under Title II, which is what the 2015 Open Internet Order does, the order that's the current FCC is seeking to overturn. And so it's not just good policy to have net neutrality rules that prevent ISPs from discriminating with respect to your traffic. It's also the law. It's the correct classification. These services are telecommunication services, which means that they transmit information of your choice to and from the locations of your choice. And so Congress has spoken here. And the idea that net neutrality opponents get to complain about the flip-flopping is a little bit surprising, given that we finally had an FCC that classified broadband correctly, said, yes, it's Title II. Yes, we're going to apply net neutrality rules to it. We finally had a court that said, yes, you did it in a legally appropriate way. And that was settled. And now Chairman Pai is trying to flip that at the same time as complaining about the idea that this is going to flip back and forth with each administration. And we had rules that worked, and we had rules that were consistent with what Congress said ought to be the regulatory scheme.
Let me go back to Larry Downs here, though. Wasn't there an order back in 2015 that set a legal precedent?
You mean the order that we're talking about here? Yeah, where they said we're going to reclassify.
Where would Congress come into this, or how does Congress come into this from your perspective?
Well, so there were people, and I filed papers in this case and said, you know, the definition of telecommunication service is not what was intended to be applied for broadband. It was the definition for information services. That's certainly historically where the two definitions had come from. And the FCC disagreed. That's not a big surprise. And they went ahead and did this reclassification. There was challenged in court. The D.C. Circuit agreed with the FCC. The full court refused to hear it again. But the case is not over. As I say, it's still sitting at the Supreme Court. They're pretty much waiting to see what Chairman Pai does with the order itself. But whether or not this Title II classification was legal is still sitting at the court.
It's still moot. Let me do this. Let me invite listeners to join us. I know many of you have strong opinions about this, and you also have questions that you want answered. So let me tell you how you can join the program and join the conversation. You can do that now by going to our toll-free number, and this is whether you're listening on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite. It's available to you now. It's 866-733-6786. Let me give you that again, toll-free. 866-733-6786 is the number to call. You can also join us, by the way, with any questions or comments you might have by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. Or go to our Facebook page or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQED Forum, but we do want to hear from you. And again, feel free to join the program. We spoke with Tony Rahm earlier of Recode. Larry Downs from the Georgetown Center for Business and Public Policy is here with us in studio, and so is Kit Walsh, staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And Kit Walsh, what about this getting rid of, general conduct standard? I mean, how does that fit into the whole picture?
Yeah, I think we'd have a very different conversation if all that the order had done was say we're going to get rid of this general conduct rule. What's really key and central to protecting net neutrality are the bright line rules that were in the 2015 Open Internet Order. No blocking, no throttling, no paid prioritization. And unfortunately, those are they're the weeds that are being whacked, according to Chairman Pi, but they're the center of net neutrality protections. I'd also like to talk a little bit about the idea that the FTC or antitrust law are adequate to protect the users of internet service. There are really good reasons why the FTC cannot do this. This is the Federal Trade Commission as opposed to the Federal Communications Commission. The acronyms can get confusing, but the FTC deals with deceptive trade practices. So if the companies say they're going to do one thing and then they do another, then the FTC can come in after the fact and try to do something about it. But if the companies are transparent about the idea that they're going to favor people who pay them to favor their content, they're going to favor their own platforms, then the FTC, that's not deceptive. That's just anti-speech and anti-innovation. It's not something the FTC can speak to. Plus, the ISPs, with AT&T leading the charge, have successfully argued in court that the FTC cannot enforce rules against companies that run telephone companies. This is the case of AT&T Mobility versus the FTC. It applies here in California and along the whole West Coast.
Okay, excuse me. We're coming right up on a break. I'd like to get a response from Larry Downs before we go to break.
Yeah, that case was actually nullified by the full court. They've agreed to rehear it en banc. They had oral arguments. So, in fact, that law is not settled in any case. But the underlying opinion that said common carriers couldn't be regulated, even if they're non-common carrier part of their business, that opinion is gone. That's been wiped off the books.
And the general conduct standard?
Yeah, I agree with I've cited EFF many times on this. The general conduct standard, which was added the last minute in 2015, was a terrible idea. It is the worst piece of it, and I would agree with Kit that we should get rid of that first and foremost.
But you'd still like to see it go through if that was thrown out?
The rest of the order?
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about that after the break.
All right. Well, we are coming up on a break. And again, we invite your involvement in the program. FCC revealing a new plan to drastically overturn net neutrality rules. What do you think about it? And what do you think about preserving or keeping net neutrality versus really, again, the metaphor seems to be whacking the weeds here. Join us toll free, 866-733-6786. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Michael Krasny. Yesterday, the Federal Communications Commission revealed its plan to fully overturn Obama-era net neutrality rules. The FCC tweeted that this will remove heavy-handed utility-style regulation of the Internet, and critics of the new plan say deregulation will open the door for telecom heavyweights like Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon to favor certain websites and charge companies for speedier delivery of their content. We're going to discuss the proposal and also get into a debate about it this hour. We've already gotten into it and what's going to be presented at the FCC Commissioners meeting in December. With us, Kit Walsh, staff attorney for the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who specializes in net neutrality and other topics, and Larry Downs, project director for the Georgetown Center for Business and Public Policy and author of Unleashing the Killer App, and more recently a co-author of Big Bang Disruption. Let me ask you, Larry Downs, actually a caller couldn't stay on the line but was very concerned about the fact that I'm looking at some of the comments that are coming in along these lines about the head of the FCC, Ajit Pai. FCC Chairman Pai is a pawn of corporate power, a listener writes. Having him as chairman of the FCC is very much like having the fox guarding the chicken coop. And caller pointed out, who couldn't stay on the line, that he was, I guess, chief attorney for Verizon.
No, he wasn't the chief attorney. He was a staff attorney very early in his legal career. He did work for Verizon, but at a very low level. Yeah, look, I don't know Chairman Pai all that well, but he's a longtime Washington guy. He's been in and out of the government. He's been involved with communication policy his entire career, both in Congress and at the FCC and in private practice as well. You know, when he was confirmed, there wasn't really a whole lot of debate about his qualifications as chairman or as commissioner some years ago.
Any thoughts about that, Kit Walsh?
Yeah, I think this is certainly exactly what the big ISPs want. So if you look at results, this is a boon to the ISPs. They're trying to get out from under regulation so that they can maximize their profits, extract payments from other companies on the internet as well as end users. I thought it was interesting in the first half of the program, the conversation was characterized as telcos versus big tech companies. And I think that's actually not right. I think the 2015 open internet order was the result of a massive movement from users of the internet. We generated over 4 million comments, which at the time was a record. And we got a result that was politically unthinkable in Washington just a year before. We got actual enforceable net neutrality rules. And I'm not really concerned about the Googles and Amazons of Netflixes of the world. They can afford to pay the tolls. It's the people who are going to come in, the next Netflix, the next Google, who want to compete, but find there's this huge barrier where they have to pay for equal access to customers. Those are the ones that I'm worried about. So big tech and telco, there's a place where they could both be happy that we as users of the internet should not be happy with.
Yeah, Larry Downs, there is this argument that doing away with net neutrality is going to hurt most of all startups and small businesses.
Well, I think that's right in the sense of if anybody is hurt, it would be the smaller companies. Kit's absolutely right. The big companies, I mean, Netflix now has twice as many subscribers as Comcast and the DirecTV put together. They've got all the leverage that they need, and they've said so. It's true that the risk of mistreatment would be to smaller companies. And I, frankly, have been back and forth about the idea of banning paid prioritization in particular. I think from a technical standpoint, it's not really what people think it is. It's really only talking about the last mile. All the traffic that comes up till that point, the ISPs don't have the control over it, so they can't prioritize it even if they wanted to. And you see companies like Netflix, but also private companies using content delivery networks, building sort of private fast lanes, either for themselves or for their customers, to get the traffic to the ISPs in the first place. But look, if in fact there is an issue about paid prioritization, all the bills that were floated in Congress banned it, including the Republican one that was circulated, which is still on the table. It was an explicit ban on paid prioritization. If that's what we want, then we certainly can do it.
And Kit Walsh, here's a listener who wants to know, can city, and I'll go over your calls in just a moment, those of you waiting on the line, but Ron wants to know, can cities which own the land of the cable line demand net neutrality?
So one thing that cities can do in order to protect net neutrality and privacy is to try to encourage competition at the local level. So here in San Francisco, there is an initiative to invest in fiber infrastructure, which would lower the barrier to entry. Because right now, it's very expensive to start a new ISP, particularly if you have to dig, you have to lay fiber, etc. And to get customers, the incumbent ISPs can always just undercut you. They can take a loss in your region,
they have
subsidize
every advantage
it elsewhere, yeah. And then no one will switch to you because the incumbent's so cheap and you're out of luck. The way that at the city level you can try to address that is to invest in a municipal fiber network. And the city of San Francisco is working on a proposal to do just that. You have to be careful about the way that you manage it in order to make sure that it's not the city running its own ISP, but rather the city lowering the barrier to private competition. But once you have that competition, that's a big protection for net neutrality, for privacy, which we haven't touched on very much, but is absolutely a part of today's announcement. And the city of San Francisco is already working on a plan to do that.
All right, let me bring our callers aboard here, and let's first start out with a caller from Pensacola, Florida. David, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, this is David calling. My question was, what would be the consumer benefit for banning net neutrality? So why would a consumer want to get behind the ending of net neutrality?
Good question. Larry Downs, can we put it to you?
Yeah, I think the argument is, and you know, we don't really have, as we discussed earlier, much evidence, obviously, from 2015 till now. But the argument would be that the net neutrality rules, and even more so the uncertainty about the FCC's authority and how far it goes, have stifled investment or have slowed down investment in new infrastructure, and particularly in the wireless space with upcoming 5G networks, and that with some legal certainty and with minimal regulation, we'll have more private investment. We have $1.5 billion so far since 96, and that with the sort of rule making from 2015 out of the way, that will return to its previous levels if, in fact, that there were declines, which I think the evidence did suggest, in the record at least, that there were significant declines.
Let me thank you for the call, and let me bring another caller right aboard here. Helen, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling to say that the fundamental issue here is that the FCC's rules were about the pipe that comes to your house or to your business. It's not about the content, although certainly ISPs now can provide content. But fundamentally, this is about the line that comes to your house or the wireless connection to your phone. And that is what those rules are intended to protect. And the FCC found in its 2015 order that there was abuse by the Internet service providers, and that is why they imposed those rules. And so commitments by Comcast or AT&T or anybody else that they're not going to abuse the system and they're going to protect you are just baloney, because they did it before and they'll do it again as soon as they have the chance.
All right. I thank you for that. Although, let me go to you on this, Kit Walsh. Don't the records show, or that is the FCC records, that the telecoms invested less under net neutrality?
Well, that's not what their CEO said to their own investors about the impact of net neutrality rules on investment. And as we discussed earlier, the investment is reduced when the telecoms are consolidating, when there's less competition, and competition has spurred investment. So net neutrality is not something that reduces investment. Net neutrality has been the rule and the norm throughout the explosive growth of the Internet.
We'll take some more of your calls, and let's go next to you. Milton, thank you for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, good morning. Long-time listener, first-time caller. My question for Ms. Wells is kind of just assuming, like much of this administration, these rules change, and we have to confront the reality after Chairman Pai has just essentially ignored the public. What will the next day, what will the next year, you know, what's kind of the future going to look like for the immediate term?
Yeah, to you again, Kit Walsh.
Sure. So first of all, you know, don't assume that. Don't give up. Now is the right time to call Congress. Calls to Congress do matter. Battleforthenet.com has driven, yesterday they drove 140,000 calls to Congress on this issue. That's on top of tens of thousands more throughout the month of November. FCC votes have been stopped in the past. This is not an order. This is an announcement of something they will vote on December 14th. So don't give up. If you care about your privacy, you can tell your state legislator that you care about broadband privacy, even though the FCC is saying that they have the power to block states from doing that. They do not. And at the city level, you can support local broadband. And at home, you can make the decision, if you're lucky enough to be one of the few Americans with access to multiple choices for broadband, you can quit the big telecoms that are lobbying for net neutrality, opt for a smaller ISP.
Let me thank the caller and go right to a caller from St. Louis, and that's William. Join us. You're on the air.
Hi there. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener. Thank you guys for taking my call. I pretty much just wanted to say that there's no real argument against net neutrality. All right. There's no real argument that why we should repeal it. These companies aren't going to innovate. There's only three or four of them, honestly, that control a great majority of all the cable internet in America. There's no real innovation that they're doing. As soon as they officially lobby to get rid of these rules, they're not going to try to compete with each other. They've lobbied for laws that are going to get that make it so they don't have to.
Thank you for weighing in, William. Let me go to Larry Downs on this. I mean, essentially he's saying it's not going to make much difference in terms of investment, which is what we're hearing pretty much from Commissioner Pai, that it will.
Yeah,
well, or innovation or whatever.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It's, you know, as an economist, which I'm not, you can't really judge anyway. Whatever the numbers show, we only had a couple of years now. And in fact, for the first year of the 2015 order, it was in litigation. So the impact on investment of the 2015 order, it's really, really hard to say if there was any. But that is, I say, what the argument is that investment will continue to decline if the order had not been reversed.
What do you say to Sean, who says, if Comcast decides to throttle certain sites under the new rules, what would my recourse be as a consumer? Would I have to hope for and wait years for the FTC lawsuit to proceed?
Well, I mean, suppose the FTC, you know, would be the channel there, or obviously depending on where the caller lives, if they switch providers, if they live in an urban area where there's more than one choice for a provider, they can go to a different provider. And it also depends on what the throttling is about. So in 2007, when Comcast was fined by the FCC for throttling and blocking content from BitTorrent users, what they found was that, you know, at that point, it may be still 99% of that traffic was infringement, copyright infringement files being sent of audio and video. And even under every version of the rules that we've seen, the 2010 version, the 2015 version, throttling illegal content is not only allowed, it's required under the law.
And here's a listener who writes, this is Noelle, since we're talking about Comcast, wants to express a strong opinion about it. She says, get rid of Comcast. If we can't block this decision, then choose another provider. I know there are places where this is not possible, but for those of us who can, time to switch. I guess Pi would applaud this. And I'm going to you on this, Kit Walsh. Another listener says, actually wants to know some explanation for the burden, what's being called, I guess, the onus of it. How does saying you have to treat everyone the same in some way burdensome regulation, like the FCC chairman says?
It's not. It's not burdensome. It's the way that the internet has worked. And Larry alluded to a First Amendment argument that some of the ISPs have made, that they actually have a free speech right in order to discriminate, to control what you say, what you read online. And that's completely backwards. That's a backwards, cynical argument. We in the ACLU filed a brief explaining why that's wrong, why the Open Internet Order of 2015 was appropriately tailored and protected free speech rather than diminishing it, because there wasn't a free speech interest that was harmed on the part of the ISPs, and because the order was so crucial to protecting the free speech of users of the internet.
Can you say something about what you feel the consequences would be of all of these so-called fast lanes?
Sure. The fast lanes essentially mean that the providers own content. So the Comcast's Universal or AT&T's own streaming video platform is going to be more reliable, faster than competitors. And the ISP will have the choice of whether they want to allow competitors to pay them to boost their speed. So again, the big incumbent companies are going to be able to afford this. New companies, nonprofits, political organizations, individuals are not, which means you get a second-class internet experience. Pages load more slowly, content may not stream fluidly, and it tends to drive people towards the websites that are going to work better. So it distorts the information that people experience online as they gravitate towards services that work better, or services that are just cheaper because the ISP isn't extracting a toll from its own associates, but it does extract a toll from competitors. You go to the cheaper option, you go to the option that works better, and it doesn't work better. It's not cheaper because it's a better business. It's solely because the ISP is abusing its position as the gatekeeper of information to you in order to degrade the experience that others are able to offer.
You say what to that, Larry Downs?
Yeah, well, I'd say that's right in the sense that we already have, as I mentioned before, we have these fast lanes. And again, it goes to the large content providers, Netflix, Google, Facebook, Amazon. They have built exactly this up until the point when it gets to the ISP. They have either their own private content delivery networks or they use third-party content delivery networks to get traffic placed all over the net so that it's duplicated and can get to the ISP's point even faster. And in fact, that's exactly what Netflix did. They said, we don't want to be at risk of being having performance that we can't control. So they've built their own network from their site all the way up to where the ISP's head end is to make sure that their traffic gets there faster.
Well, let me go to a question from a listener named Julie. It's apropos here. She says, forget Amazon and Google. What would be the impact on my family of not having net neutrality? My kids doing their studies using the internet, trying to keep up with kids of families that have more resources and access. Is this going to lead to a bigger gap in education or a bigger gap in overall opportunity for those with less resources? Larry Downs?
So I don't know the answer to that, but I think it's important to know that the burdensome regulation that your previous listener asked about, you know, the ISPs, I take them at their word or what their behavior has been. They're not opposed to the basic net neutrality principles. What they've been opposed to all along is the way in which the FCC has gone about it, what the source of their authority was, and how much further they might take that authority into other areas. So to the standpoint that there's anything burdensome that the chairman is talking about here, it's not the net neutrality rules. It's the rest of Title II. It's all those common carrier public utility regulations from the 1930s and thereafter that initially the FCC said we're not going to initially apply these, but they left open the possibility that they would. And indeed, in the last weeks of the Wheeler chairmanship of the FCC, they started to move aggressively to add more of those kinds of regulation. As far as the net neutrality principles, as I say, I don't think there's really a lot of controversy about these ideas. I always have said it would be better to get them done through legislation, and maybe now that the decks have been cleared once again, there may be more interest in Congress for doing that.
And Larry Downs is project director of the Georgetown Center for Business and Public Policy. Kit Walsh is staff attorney for the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Let me get a little clarity here maybe from you, Kit Walsh. A listener wants to know, there's no such thing as a fast lane for internet access, this listener writes. The only way anything can move faster is by intentionally slowing down other traffic so that the faster is by comparison. It's paying an ISP to install speed bumps in everyone else's lanes. How is this not an antitrust action?
So one of the reasons that antitrust is limited in the area of net neutrality, actually, there are a few different reasons. So one is because of something called the single entity rule, which essentially is an exception to the normal rules about colluding between companies to disadvantage others. And it's basically if you are the same entity, so if your ISP owns your content, then the normal collusion rules don't apply. The second is that antitrust rules are primarily about economic harms and don't recognize speech harms as something that antitrust law is able to deal with. So antitrust is not an adequate tool. It's certainly a piece of the puzzle. But because of those two things and because of the way that courts have said, if your business is also regulated by the FCC, then normal antitrust rules don't apply. Antitrust is unfortunately an unreliable tool for protecting against net neutrality harms.
We're getting requests, Kit Walsh, for the petition site again. Could you give that one more time?
Yep. BattleForTheNet.com. That's BattleForTheNet.com. And you can also sign up at EFF.org for action alerts. Like right now is a crucial time to contact Congress. And in the future, there will be state legislation to protect the privacy that has been taken away through recent FCC actions and congressional repeal of the prior 2015 FCC order.
Here's Ken. Ken, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Yeah, I was just asking. I mean, we're talking like the U.S. is the entire internet. I mean, it's billions of people now all over the world. What's the net neutrality in the rest of the world?
Yeah, we're getting a couple questions along those lines. Can you help us here, Larry Downs?
So there's a mixed bag here. There are other countries and other locations that have various different versions of net neutrality, some with good results, some with not so good results. It's really not particularly uniform. There's probably not much of a possibility of sort of uniform regulation on something that's so important to individual national economies. But, I've read several studies that say where there's been strong net neutrality in different countries, South America and Europe, the results have been, in fact, diminished investment by ISPs.
And what about where there's net neutrality is not the rule? What do we know there's more investment?
The study didn't look at those in particular, so I guess I can't say.
All right. We'll thank the caller and move along to another caller, and that's you. Kent, you're on.
Yes, I just have a quick question. Al Franken, a big supporter of net neutrality, a big voice in it, is muted right now because of his picadillo. Does his voice being muted affect this at all, affect it getting out to the public, affect us understanding it?
Kid Walsh?
So Congress has started to talk about the potential for legislation. Likely that would wait until after the court challenge if Ajit Pai's plan goes through. And unfortunately, at a hearing this past month, they started to toy with the idea that they were going to allow paid prioritization. So back when the people of the internet were winning, we saw proposals that said, oh, well, let's enshrine these bright line rules in legislation. Let's set this clear. But then once the tides turn, those offers proved to be less sincere. We get more aggressive ISP lobbying that is going to allow things that previously we have considered violations of net neutrality. So I think it's really important that that you reach out to Congress and that the folks in Congress keep insisting that we not allow violations of net neutrality, either via FCC abdicating its responsibilities or new legislation that would do so.
And we'll go to another caller. I thank the previous caller. We'll go next to you, Rita. You're on the air.
Hi. I run a brand new nonprofit startup, and we rely entirely on our website and being able to reach our users through our website, and we would not be able to afford a higher internet service. And, literally my livelihood is tied up in this. So what would you say to somebody like me who, if these prices go up, if I can't afford to reach my people through the internet, then my entire livelihood goes down the drain. And this is a worthy project that I'm pursuing. So that, and there's lots, hundreds, thousands of people just like me. What would you say to somebody like me?
What would you say, Larry Downs?
Well, I guess what I'd say is, during the nearly 20 years when there were no specific rules and there was FTC and FCC enforcement, none of these horrible things happened. Of course, prices go up for lots of other reasons as well. But that if this really is a concern, then clearly the solution is, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but it's congressional legislation. The Thune-Upton-Walden bill, this bill that was distributed just before the FCC voted in 2014, banned paid prioritization, banned throttling, banned blocking, required transparency. Everything that the net neutrality advocates want was in that bill. Senate Democrats and House Democrats weren't interested in negotiating that because they thought they were going to win the 2016 election and they wouldn't have to worry about the next FCC. That turned out to be a bad gamble, but Thune, Walton, Upton have said this bill is still on the table.
Kid Walsh, any advice or wisdom for the caller?
I think you're not alone. We've seen thousands of small businesses writing into to Congress and the FCC with the same concerns. And I think it's a legitimate concern, obviously. That Thune bill is the one that I was talking about that was introduced when it looked like we were going to get net neutrality regulations, and paid prioritization is back on the table now as of the most recent congressional hearings. So putting faith in Congress is not necessarily a winning strategy, but calling on Congress to stop Ajit Pai from ruining your business is absolutely something that you and I hope all of the listeners today are going to do.
But is it perhaps folly when you think about Congress being essentially a majority of Republicans, just like Ajit Pai is a Republican?
So after they rolled back the privacy protections, there was a huge public outlash. And this is a bipartisan issue. 73% of Republicans support it when we're talking about human beings who are not members of Congress.
Support net neutrality.
Support net neutrality. That's right. 73% of Republicans support net neutrality. It's even more if you don't call it net neutrality because it's become a partisan issue in Washington, D.C. And after they rolled back everyone's privacy protections, they heard from constituents. They heard at town halls. They heard from people calling in. And they're still a little bit shell-shocked from that. Ultimately, they are responsible to the voters. And back in 2015, we the people had a stunning victory over the ISP lobby here. And the way to reproduce that victory is to keep melting down the phone lines in Congress the way people have been doing since yesterday when the announcement was made.
Let me thank the caller. A tweet from a listener, Larry Downs, who says, why would we give up a public utility service to the control of corporations and content providers? What possibly could go wrong? I have not heard one cogent argument for giving up internet ownership to private ventures.
Well, that's where it's been all along up until 2015. We're here in California. We have a lot of experience with how public utilities do and don't work when they're regulated by public utility commissions. If you love PG&E, if you love the service you're getting, if you love the exploding gas lines, then you will love a nationalized broadband infrastructure.
Well, here's Logan who wants to know, might this help us understand and perhaps even defend against foreign advertising during campaigns? What do you think? Kid Walsh?
So the question is whether net neutrality would help defend against foreign advertising. I think the ISPs are not the place where that kind of control of content takes place. So the ISP should not be the entity that's watching what goes over its pipes, that's deciding what goes over its pipes. You may not like some of the content that occurs on the internet, but if you make Comcast or Verizon the arbiter of what can be said on the internet, you're going to like that even less.
And Larry Downs, Bob writes, this is Tax Reform Act of the network age. Lots of promises, historically few or no public benefits. You say what to that?
I'm not sure I understand that. The repealing the 2015 order is like tax reform and we won't get any benefits.
It's mainly going to corporations, I think, is what the argument is. It's not going to the public.
Yeah, so we'll have to see. I mean, as I say, we're really going back to the regime we had before 2015 and, you know, really not till 2016 when the court approved the 2015 order. That seemed to be working pretty well for most of the last 20 years. We'll find out if it does in the future.
Well, we will leave it there, and I thank you both. Thanks to Tony Rahm earlier, who joined us from Recode, and thanks, Larry Downs. Good to have you with us.
Pleasure.
Thank you, Kit Walsh. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, our listeners. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated, 10 to 11 in the evening, and you can continue. In fact, would encourage you to continue this discussion online by going to kqed.org/forum. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, Tina Larberg, and Jeremy Siegel. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer and Katie McMurrin. Our engagement producers are Amanda Stupai and Devin Holt, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Interns are Anna Sterla and Patrick Fitzgerald. Managing editor is Ethan Lindsay, and our executive producer is Holly Kernan. Thank you for being a part of this opening hour. We're going to talk about the end of Alzheimer's in the hour ahead. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of the Minetti Schremm Museum of Art at UC Davis, who believe that all people deserve access to education and culture to enrich a lifetime of exploration and learning.